answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
By far the heaviest amount of airstrikes that we've witnessed here in the past 2 weeks. Overnight last night, the late evening hours into the early morning hours, really heavy bombardment shaking this house, the most sustained amount of missiles and artillery that we've experienced here, and we've been here for 2 weeks. Today, as you say, much quieter. We hear drones in the sky, but no sounds of impacts here in northern Gaza. And one of the things that we're hearing as well is the reason that the government here is so, Israel, Prime Minister Netanyahu's government, is so concerned about a humanitarian pause is they think that that will be used by Hamas to gain an advantage, to alleviate some of the pressure that they're facing at the moment, and this pressure designed to help move along hostage releases. Talking to some of the troops who are close to the front here, they talk about, you know, being told to be ready for action and then action not coming and sort of stood up, stood down. But speaking to past veterans of wars here, they say, look, we've been through this here before. We can stay out and do this in the field as long as we like.
That is a CBS reporter on the scene in outside Gaza watching the strikes go into Gaza, and that they began to ease up because they are trying to get humanitarian aid in. The report coming out of Gaza is that we have no morphine, we have no meds whatsoever to help patients who need surgery, so we've got to have something, plus food, water, things of that nature as basic essentials. And, of course, you have to know and understand that among the state-controlled media, they're going to continue to push that line that we, the U.S., and Israel are helping starve and hurt the people of Palestine who are caught in the middle of this. But where did it start? Did Israel start by shutting off all the fuel and water and to that part of the country, to the Gaza Strip? Or did it start with October 7, when Hamas terrorists ripped through the gates and charged in on motorcycles, trucks, throwing grenades, firing at will, chopping off the heads of children, raping them in front of their parents? Or is that where it started? You know where it started. But we all have a humanitarian streak in us. And we know that there are many caught inside. They want to get out of there. They don't want to be under Hamas. The problem is, if they catch them trying to leave, they're likely to shoot and kill them on the spot anyway. So I had to say sheltered, hunkered down. So to get the aid in, and several truckloads entered yesterday, and more apparently were going to be entering today or tomorrow morning, 8 hours difference. And they're going to move through the Rafah crossing, which connects Egypt. It would be an opportunity for Hamas to turn some hostages loose. So far, we haven't seen that. According to the Israeli Defense Forces, Hamas has kidnapped something like, well, they're giving a specific number now, 222. Normally, I think I'd see them say a little over 200, but they're being precise. That tells you that they've got intel on the ground from either some of their hostage rescue units they sent in or from Hamas terrorists that they've captured, that they've been able to put together a pretty precise picture. But where they are, and if Israel continued to bomb and shell while relief aid is coming in, you might destroy one of those UN trucks, peace convoys. Hamas would love it. They could care less. Destroy all the food, the medical supplies, and look what Israel did. Right now they're doing everything they can to turn the world in their favor. A lot of the world is already in their favor. We got members of our Congress who are in their favor, who will not even denounce the slaughter that took place October 7. I don't care if you support PLO or you're a Palestinian resident. Can you justify
what they did to children the other day? No. And if you think you can, you and I need to have a come to Jesus meeting. Thanks for joining us. This is hour number two of Larry Connors USA. October 23rd, 2023. When we're on the air, we have video of the show streaming for you. Larry Connors USA Facebook and Twitter. News Talk STL Facebook and Twitter and on Rumble. If you miss any of the video feed or any of the audio, you couldn't catch the first hour, not all of it, you simply go to LarryConnorsUSA.com. Everything will be available for you. Now, this correspondent pointed out, and we've heard talk about it, that Israel has a new weapon that they're using to fight, and they're using it for the first time against Hamas. Here's the reporter, the correspondent on the scene.
This is a weapon that really advances technologically the old-fashioned mortar. The old-fashioned mortar is sort of a close infantry tool. You can use it close to the front line or a little further back. It fires really high in the air, goes right up and comes right down. Now, typically in the past, if you're using the old-fashioned version, you need a forward spotter who can see where it's hitting, and it takes maybe three rounds for a good mortar team to put a round precisely on a target. This new system apparently does away with that entirely. It is computer controlled. You dial in the designated location of the target, and this mortar fires and hits that target with pinpoint accuracy.
It is called the Iron Sting. That's what the Israelis call it. And it's not a secret anymore. I mean, it might have been a secret at one time, but now it's in use, so it's not being kept a secret. Now, as you heard the correspondent say, normally if you're a forward position, and you're calling in for a mortar strike, there's often fire one for effect. They've given you calculations of where the enemy should be, and maybe it falls to the right 100 yards. So you tell them to adjust it, range and our direction. And they adjust it, and maybe they get a little closer. And they give them another adjustment signal or transmission. Then they drop it right on top of the target they originally intended. This new weapon that the Israelis have, they do not say that it involves AI, but I would imagine listening to it that it's kind of part of it, because if it can make those kinds of determinations on its own, then it must be something like that. But they're not going to give all the details out. Looking at this, the Sting again, as it's called, the Iron Sting. The IDF has even shown footage to show commandos using it. It's a laser and GPS-guided mortar. Now, it's very similar to a rocket or missile, but it's a mortar and apparently extremely effective. Antony Blinken appearing on Face the Nation CBS over the weekend and said, "We do need to be worried. I mean, after we saw Hamas break through the barriers and the protective forces, supposedly, for Israel, we have to worry that maybe they will turn on some of our U.S. forces in this theater or some other area."
We are concerned at the possibility of Iranian proxies escalating their attacks against our own personnel, our own people. We're taking every measure to make sure that we can defend them and, if necessary, respond decisively. Not at all what we're looking for, not at all what we want, but we'll be prepared if that's what they choose to do. No one should take advantage of this moment to escalate, to further attacks on Israel, or for that matter, attacks on us, on our personnel. And this is not by way of, in terms of what we're doing by provocation. It's designed to deter, designed to make clear that no one should use this moment in any way to escalate.
All right, I understand that, and that's good. But don't you think you would begin by defending your own homeland? By closing the border, this is a total misfit running the operation, all of them. If you see your neighboring country, a country that you support wholeheartedly, Israel, being surrounded by enemies already and now they're trying to dismantle it, and you're allowing an open border here, if you're a terrorist operative, would you not think, let's get some people inside the U.S. before they shut it down? and we can do more to the U.S. than Israel. And, of course, we still have hostages. According to the IDF, Gaza, or rather the Hamas, is holding 222 hostages. That's very precise. But Blinken says we're still working on getting them out.
To date, at least, Hamas has blocked them from leaving, showing once again its total disregard for civilians of any kind who are stuck in Gaza.
Have you asked the Israeli government to delay in order to give you more time to broker the release of these hostages?
First, step back for a second, because it's important to remember what happened. It's incredible how quickly that gets lost, because it was only a couple of weeks ago that Hamas invaded Israel with its terrorist fighters and slaughtered, and I use that word very deliberately, slaughtered so many people. Again, men, women, young children, babies, old people, you name it. And they continue to rain rockets down on Israel. When I was there a few days ago, we had to take shelter a couple of times because of incoming rockets from Hamas.
And I'm glad Blinken backed her up on that point. So we're just days away from the slaughter they carried out. And he wanted to add this point.
My point is this. No country can be expected to tolerate this, to live with this. And as we said from the start, Israel has both the right and even the obligation not only to defend itself, but to try to make sure that, to the best of its ability, this can't happen again. So we talk to the Israelis about what they're planning. We give them our best advice. It's important, as we said, not only what they do, but how they do it, particularly mm-hmm. when it comes to making sure that civilians are as protected as they possibly can be in this crossfire of Hamas is making. But in terms of what we're talking to Israel about in their with regard to their military operations, it really is focused on both how they do it and how best to achieve the results that they seek.
But here comes a question that is starting the earthquake, that is beginning to move others to ask the same thing, because, oh my God, the Palestinians trapped in the midst of this. Yes, have humanity for them, have prayers for them. But many say Israel should just cease, stop everything. Here we go.
How do you respond to enough is enough?
Enough is enough should have been the case with Hamas 2 weeks ago. It would be good to hear the entire world speaking clearly and with one voice about the actions that Hamas took, about the slaughter of people, about the fact that that should be absolutely intolerable, unacceptable to anyone, anywhere, any country, mm-hmm. any people.
But in the New York Times, the columnist Tom Friedman wrote a column saying basically maybe there needs to be a back down a bit. Here's Joe Scarborough, MSNBC, reading that column.
This is what he writes in a column entitled Israel is about to make a terrible mistake. And Tom writes, I believe that if Israel rushes headlong into Gaza now to destroy Hamas and does so without expressing a clear commitment to seek a two-state solution with the Palestinian Authority and in Jewish settlements deep in the West Bank, it will be making a grave mistake that will be devastating for Israeli interests and American interests. It could trigger a global conflagration and explode an entire pro-American alliance structured that the United States has built in the region since Henry Kissinger engineered the end of the Yom Kippur War in 1973. This is not about whether Israel has the right to retaliate. It surely does. This is about doing it the right way, the way that does not play into the hands of Hamas, Iran, and Russia. Otherwise, what began as a Hamas onslaught against Israel has the potential to trigger Middle East war, with every great power and regional power having a hand in it, which could make it a very difficult war to stop once it started.
So how would Tom Friedman, who wrote it that for the New York Times, or Joe Scarborough, advise Israel what it should do? Would he just tag, you're it? We're going back to our side? Really? Netanyahu's chief advisor says, we are exercising restraint anyway.
Israel has been very judicious. Your own reporters on the ground have said that Israel is still not moved. And we're preparing and we're planning. And when we actually do go in, it'll be after much thought and after we've thought not just about what the next step is, but the step after that and the step after that. We are indeed being judicious. We're not acting from anger. We're not acting hastily. We're thinking this through thoroughly. But to the larger point, I think it's crucial that we win this and we win it decisively, because the whole region is watching. And if Israel can't defeat these Hamas murderers, then that's a victory for terrorists everywhere. That's a victory for Hezbollah. That's a victory for Iran. We have to show the world that the sort of violence that they inflicted upon us on that terrible Saturday 2 weeks ago, that doesn't pay.
Does not pay, except in Hamas blood. Unfortunately, yes, Palestinian citizens who had nothing to do with it will be caught in the crossfire. All right, I want to go back in history. This date, 1983.
This is a CBS News special report.
Good morning from CBS News New York. At least 76 United States Marines were killed this morning in Lebanon, and at least 115 were wounded. Those numbers may rise considerably higher. A truck filled with explosives was driven into a compound in the midst of a Marine Battalion headquarters, a four-story building at the Beirut airport, and the explosives were detonated. The four-story building collapsed on about 150 or 200 sleeping Marines. Just a couple of minutes later, another car filled with explosives crashed into the compound a mile away where soldiers of the French peacekeeping force were sleeping. Official Beirut radio, in an unconfirmed report, said as many as 100 French soldiers were killed.
Well, as it turned out, as developments moved forward, 58 French soldiers were killed in the attack. That's still a loss, obviously. And the death count for the Marines was higher, 220, the highest casualty rate since the attack on Iwo Jima in World War II. 21 other service personnel injured. Here's a correspondent reporting from the scene.
The devastation is total. The four-story barracks has been reduced to a vast pile of rubble. The former office building completely collapsed on itself, burying underneath an estimated 200 Marines who lay sleeping in their bunks. Helicopters are working nonstop to ferry the wounded and dead to the fleet offshore. Dazed Marine officers say the massive explosion was caused by a truck carrying some 2,000 pounds of TNT. It crashed through the front gate, raced past shocked Marine guards, and exploded in the lobby of the building itself. Early this morning, the open area in front of the rubble was strewn with stretchers bearing the bodies and pieces of bodies of dozens of dead Americans. Marines, Navy men flown in from the fleet, Lebanese troops, Red Cross rescue workers, and Italian peacekeepers are all working feverishly trying to find men who may still be alive. Occasionally, they find a battered Marine who's managed to survive in a cavity beneath the rubble. More often, it's yet another body that they find.
And those Marines on the sentry gates were shocked, but what was worse, they were not prepared to defend the barracks. Not that they would not have wanted to be prepared, but they apparently were not given ammunition. How the hell are you supposed to protect and serve as a sentry if you don't have ammunition? We're going to get into that more with a St. Louisan who was in the Beirut area at the time, not inside that building. But he lost some friends. Remember our pledge. And also lock and load, ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
I want to share something special with you. I've told you how Wellington Environmental works to keep hospitals, schools, businesses safe for their patients, students, clients, employees. Wellington can do the same for you. Perfect example. A relative went to the basement, almost knocked over by the smell. A sewer line had broken. A call to Wellington, a crew was dispatched. First thing, make the home safe. Then clean up the mess. Truly clean it up. Now I'm telling you this because I want the best for you. Wellington Environmental. Here's the number, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. AAA rating with the Better Business Bureau. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
Talk radio made in St. Louis.
Very excited for what you guys are doing for the St. Louis community.
For St. Louis.
Relevant local talk.
Saying what we are thinking.
This is News Talk STL.
You guys are awesome. I love you. And really, it's a tremendous honor to be on the station.
News, analysis, and opinion.
Thanks for covering the local angle.
Come on, people. This is America.
We better open our eyes.
Really local? Really good.
News Talk STL at 1019 941
and NewsTalkSTL.com.
As a truck driver, I've learned how important road safety is. I know that large trucks need more time and room to stop. That's why I always hang back and follow other vehicles at a safe distance. Everyone can help keep our roads safe. Next time you're driving, try to remember to always give trucks extra space when you merge in front of them. Let's all plan to share the road safely. Learn how at www.sharetheroadsafely.gov.
This is Christina Strait with Strait Realty reminding you, why pay more than four? In 2003, we had a dream to start a real estate company that would revolutionize the real estate market. Now, 20 years later, after navigating through the many markets ups and downs, we know exactly how to help you in this challenging time. I'm Christina Strait, owner Strait Realty. Don't give away your hard-earned equity. Give us a call today, 314-441-4444, 314-441-ALL-4s. And remember, why pay more than four?
Strait Realty is a licensed broker in the state of Missouri.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Welcome back. And describing that explosion that hit the barracks on this date, 1983. It was something like 18,000 pounds of TNT, one of the largest bombings ever, aside from using a nuclear weapon. And it killed 220 Marines and also others in sailors and other service people. One of those who was in the area but by chance had been given the graveyard shift to go on guard duty is from the St. Louis area. Johnny Harper, you were stationed at the time as a corporal. Welcome.
Yes, I was the last corporal of the time. Yes, thank you for having me.
Now, right now, I appreciate you taking time, sir, because I know you're at Camp Lejeune right now in Cherry Point, where they're taking time to honor those who died on that blast.
Exactly. Camp Lejeune, actually I'm at Camp Geiger. Camp Lejeune was earlier at the Beirut Memorial. And now we're at Camp Geiger, where all of the 1-8 was stationed at that time, 1st Battalion, 8th Marines. So there's a separate memorial service over here. So I'm here right now with Walter Wake so I can talk.
Yeah. Now, first of all, Semper Fi.
Semper Fi.
And I'm thinking you by chance were not in there. If you had not been given that shift, you could have well been inside.
Well, yeah, I was actually supposed to stay there that night. Because I was transferring from West Beirut, and they said, you guys can stay the night, or you can go to the front line. We had a perimeter around the runway at the Beirut International Airport, and I said, well, that's my buddy, so it's tomorrow, Sunday, so I could sleep in late and won't have to run any patrols, because Sunday's like a holiday, so I went to the front line. And, of course, that's where I was safer there, obviously.
Now, let me get one question answered before we continue. Yep. I've told this audience, and I've seen reports repeatedly, that the sentries at the gate, the Marines who were there, they did not have any ammunition. They had nothing to shoot or stop the vehicle with. Is that correct?
Well, no, they had ammunition, but again, at different points of battles or this time,
it's not chambered and not ready.
No, it was in his magazine, in his pouch. So right. When the driver drove to the gate, he had to open his magazine pouch, pull out the magazine, lock and load, before he could do anything. So the driver sped right by him. He got a couple of shots off.
Where did they decide to put sentries and you guys on the front line? If they're having guards out there, why are you not chambered and ready for something?
Well, the Geneva Convention dictates what we can and can't do, especially, you know, again, we were in the combat chain. When we first got there, of course, we were there as a peacekeeping force to help settle things going on in that area in Lebanon, train the Lebanese army. But so we were not high alert. We were there on a peacekeeping mission. We weren't there to engage or have active engagement with any enemy combatants. So we were on a very low end of awareness, for the lack of better words, at that time. So every post we stood, we had our magazines in our pouches. We were not locked and loaded. We did not have magazines in our pouches in any post that we had in Beirut. And every post was a shared American Lebanese post.
What was your thought when you were told that I can't even put the magazine in, not chamber, but just have it already attached?
Well, first of all, there's a futile argument first. But, and even we started taking rounds, taking fire, because it was a Lebanese post. It was called indirect fire because I might have been shooting to the Lebanese soldier that was 2 feet to my left.
So not a shoot
but
you.
I could not exactly. Oh. It's indirect fire, so we cannot engage until it got again. It continued to escalate and from the people there until obviously we did start engaging and had multiple firefights.
Everybody knew it was a hot zone. Now when the blast went off, you obviously had to hear it.
Yeah, we heard it. Yeah, then so I turned around and saw the smoke. I don't know if you've seen that picture, the picture of the Beirut bombing. Yeah. Actually, this was the 40th anniversary, and the gentleman that took that picture was real close to me. His name's Mike Cerniglia. He was here today, and I saw him for the first time in 40 years at the memorial. And that picture, because he had it developed by his girlfriend back 40 years ago, she has a negative. So he has no credit for that photograph. But yet we all know he took it, but he was here today, which was really cool. I got to finally see him after 40 years. But he took that picture right after the blast. Had the 35mm on him. He was wanting to shoot the sunset, and of course, then the blast happened.
Now
that's where he captured that picture.
You obviously had fellow Marines, colleagues inside the barracks.
Yes, yeah, we lost actually our youngest Marine in our battalion, Scott Schultz. It was in our platoon because they every week or every 2 weeks they would send people to work the chow hall at battalion. And Scott was there in the chow hall that morning. So, of course, because he was on the first floor, chow hall got the first, the biggest part of the explosion. There were people vaporized. Never found them.
The loss of something like that, I mean, for those who have been, had been in a war action or seeing anything like that, there's no getting it out. But you guys were using whatever you could find to dig through the rubble, your fingers, tearing nails, whatever you
fingers,
could.
K-bars, E-tools, just because this building was concrete, steel, and forged.
And it's four stories tall.
Yes, four stories tall, and it's three stories underneath the ground. That's why if you look at the picture, you'll see it's concave.
Yeah.
It collapsed within itself because there were tunnels all over Beirut.
And then, of course, a few minutes later, they hit the French barracks, but
almost 60 seconds later, they hit the French embassy, and 58 paratroopers were killed in that. Though they stopped it, the suicide bomber outside the building, he didn't get his target, but he had enough explosives on there that actually took down the building. He detonated before he died, but it still took down the building, killing 58 French paratroopers.
Setting the stage very briefly again, you guys, as you said, you were there on a peace mission. You were part of a multinational force going into Lebanon in 82 to oversee the Palestinian withdrawal from Lebanon.
Right.
And that was the whole idea. And then immediately it turned bloody. And so it was no longer just a peacekeeping. You were trying, but at the same time, there were fatalities all around you.
Well, yeah. There's civil war. They've been fighting for thousands of years. We did stop them. We haven't stopped them. We won't stop them. Again, people have asked me, and people I've talked to, with what's going on in Israel, what the alignment is, and it's Iran.
Yeah, that's where I'm going now. Go ahead.
Yeah, but even Iran, of course, Rocky Sigmund there in St. Louis, was one of the last hostage released in the Iran hostage situation.
Right.
The same people that were involved, same guy involved in the Iran hostage situation was involved in the Beirut bombing as well.
Reagan had sent you guys in 82. Then, of course, you had the explosion in 83.
Right.
84, he withdrew the troops from Lebanon. What are your thoughts on
that? Well, withdrawing, it's one, again, try not to get political. I mean, obviously, I was a Marine. But I think withdrawing wasn't a bad idea because we weren't going to be able to change anything there.
Right.
My concern, the thing that bothers me, is that no one paid for it. We never returned an answer to the people who did this. After 40 years, we haven't retaliated.
Yeah, and by pay for it, you mean by physically taking them out as well. Well, there was a decision the other day, in fact, this last March, a federal judge following a Supreme Court ruling back in 2016 that basically said that there should be, the Iranian government should be giving something like $1.7 billion in Iranian funds. I'd say fat chance they're ever going to get any of it.
Well, no, some people have gotten some of it because like, they froze those assets. So there's an active lawsuit out there for Marine families, for survivors and families of the men that were killed and those that were boots on the ground. So there's an active lawsuit, and some people have received compensation from Iran, from these dollars. I don't know how much. There's buddies of mine that are supposed to be getting money, but they've not seen a dime yet. But it's Iranian money.
Yeah. And of course,
that we're getting.
And it's not making up for the loss they had.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all.
In the days after the attack, and you're still there, and you know, certainly the situation is ratcheted up. What was the mood over the next few days?
Quite honestly, we wanted to kill as many people as we could.
I figured.
And we did. I did. It's a place you go to in your head, as a Marine, as a soldier, as a vet. Active duty, you're trained to kill, and you lost 240. We don't know how many people killed that time because obviously we didn't have Wi-Fi, internet, all those things back then. It took a while before you can find out how many were killed. But, the 300 and something guys there, 350 guys in the building, 241 were killed.
So they started operation. They started putting you out on the field to go after them, right?
Well, yes. Yeah, you can say that.
I hear a hesitation there. Go ahead.
Okay. Yes. We our engagement was cleared after that. If that makes sense.
Well, from that point forward, were Marines allowed to carry magazines fully loaded and locked into their rifle?
Yes, we were. Well, obviously, the heightened sense of alert because we were told there was going to be another attack. So we were on constant alert 24/7. So everyone positioned was locked and loaded, with their magazines full. Yeah.
I have a story I'm going to relate to the audience after we finish with you about something that I was involved in that morning when I got the word. But for you, you and others have been pushing for a resolution at least in the state of Missouri,
right,
to lower the flag on this date and memorial. Where's that stand?
Yes. Well, I started working about 7 months ago, and I've never done anything like this, and I appreciate you guys putting me on so I can talk about it. I've reached out to all the local vet groups, the VFWs. I've talked to all my local representatives and had some people, Tony Colombo helped me get somebody in that area. And the gentleman I talked to was helping to try to get it in front of the governor, and finally was told, well, the request made it to the governor, to his desk, and was told he decided he didn't want to do anything with it.
I want to ask right now, did you get in his face, say, why not?
I haven't had a chance to talk to him. I'd love to.
I'd
love to.
I hope you get that chance. And I praise Josh Hawley, I understand you did reach out to him, and he didn't do anything.
I've reached him multiple times, and I get those robot response, emailed response. And I'm thinking, well, I know they're busy, and I get it. A lot of things going on in this world. I don't think anger is the right word. I'm very disappointed in the governor. Yeah. For not wanting to move forward with it. It's a pin stroke. It's not something he has to have approval on. He could do it in his own.
And it should be done. Johnny Harper, I want to thank you for your time. You're still in the St. Louis area. And again, Semper Fi for your service, sir.
Semper Fi. Thanks for putting me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
God bless.
Thank you. And I did it because I heard you on Tony Colombo yesterday. Coming back, I'll tell you something that was going on that morning that involved me, reference that bombing. Stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This time of year, heavy rains, high winds, they can hit. And if you have any loose shingles, even the smallest hole in your roof, you're taking a major gamble with your biggest investment. I can tell you from personal experience, do not wait until you have water where it shouldn't be. Don't forget that John Beale has disaster crews, which can at least cover your roof until the damage can be fully repaired. Homeowner, business owner, call John Beale. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. Ackerman Toyota has the 2024 models. You're going to be impressed. Check them out in person at Ackerman Toyota, Hampton and Interstate 44. In fact, you've got to see the 2024 Toyota Sequoia. Very impressive. This is the time to buy and get top dollar for your vehicle. Looking for pre-owned? Ackerman Toyota can also help you. Ackerman Toyota at Hampton and 44. AckermanToyota.com. Ackerman Toyota for life. This is a scary time when it comes to your money, especially if buying a home. That's why you need Homestead Financial Mortgage. I know the owners, met the team. You can trust Homestead will be with you every step of the way. Call 24/7 with any question or concern. Homestead is on your schedule, not banker's hours. This is not just about buying a home. It's about trust. You can go to my website, larry.homesteadfinancial.com. larry.homesteadfinancial.com.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perish in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
If you like premium cigars and whiskey, I've got the perfect place. Lit Cigar Lounge, now open in its new space in the district, just off Highway 40 in Chesterfield. Lit Cigars for anyone who enjoys great cigars, whiskey, bourbon, tequila. Ladies, that includes you. Leather seating, numerous big screen TVs, special events featuring live music and tastings. More details at litstl.com. litstl.com. Lit Cigar Lounge in Chesterfield.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
And what I'm going to share with you is nothing special that others probably weren't going through, but when the word came out on that date 40 years ago, this date, 1983, about the Marine barracks being bombed in Beirut, and at least at that time 100 plus believed dead, and of course then the number ended up being 220, I remind you again of the time difference. 6:22 a.m. in Beirut is 10:22 p.m. the previous night here. It took a while for the word to get out, and then obviously got out before I saw it overnight. I just was home with the family on a Saturday night, and the next morning we're getting up and going to church, haven't turned on the TV, radio, or anything, and then going over to the church. I flipped on the radio, or it was already on, I imagine, and I started hearing reports, and I wondered how many at the church were kind of in the same situation I was, and many were, just didn't know anything about it, were not aware that it had happened, that we had lost 200-plus Americans in a flash when all those explosives went off. As I said, they were looking at, depending on, there have been different sources on how much TNT it might have been. In some cases, they were considered to be something like 12,000 pounds. Another said 22,000. It, you know, 12,000, I don't think that would have worked, but 2,000, something of that nature would be probably accurate, but. But the fact that the truck bomber was able to get right inside the barracks building, driving through, crashing into the building, and then detonating it. Now, you heard earlier, pardon me, from our interview with Johnny Harper, St. Louis, and who was stationed on guard duty that night at a sentry post, not where the breach occurred, but as a corporal, he was just doing what you do on sentry duty. Now, when you're in a war theater, you expect something could happen. But I do not understand the command not allowing them to at least have magazines already attached to the rifle. Then it's a simple chamber of the weapon, and you're ready to go. Otherwise, you got to fumble and get it out of your ammo pack and slide it in. Not that they're not well-trained to do that, but that's, again, wasted time. But, of course, a lot of that we didn't know. All we knew were the initial reports of a devastating explosion at a base where we were occupying it, along with other forces, as part of a peacekeeping mission. And most of the troops were sleeping. The bomber had those planning it. They knew a great time. Attack when they're sleeping. This has been the hallmark. And why we have not learned it before now, I don't know. I mean, 9/11, was that a targeted date? And then Benghazi, also 9/11. And then the attack right after the Holy Day celebration in Israel. Anyway, when I got word and heard about it enough, and I got additional information calling into the station, and the church service by then had started. And I thought, I think our pastor needs to know about this if he doesn't. And so I walked up to him while he's sitting there, and somebody was either delivering a prayer or a song, I can't recall. And I just whispered, "Are you aware of the explosion in Beirut?" And he said, "No." And I told him briefly what had happened, because I thought we need to send prayers up to those who have relatives in that area. And when he announced it to those in the church that day, there were audible sounds of gasps and so forth, and some tears and some fearful immediately, because they had young men, maybe women, in the Marines, but they didn't know if they were there or not. Turned out none from our church were. But prayers offered for everyone. We talked earlier with Johnny Harper when we had him on about the payment. He said they are getting some payment. He doesn't know how much, and it's coming direct from Iran. It is blood money. It's not going to make up for the loss that those families suffered. There have been numerous legal proceedings against the Iranian government since that time. Islamic Jihad did take credit for that specific attack. The U.S. has long accused Iran and its Lebanese militant proxy, Hezbollah, which still exists, of also being involved. Some are saying, well, there's really no proof that Hezbollah even existed at that time, that it came out of Lebanon in the 1980s. Doesn't make any difference whatever name it paraded under at that time. It was Iranian-backed terrorist action. And this is why we should not be giving any money to Iran. We should not sign off on anything that gives them the capability to start building nuclear facilities, just building for power plants, just to help get our people out of the Stone Age. And I tell you, no, they want to put you in the Stone Age. There's a concern that Joe Biden has resumed talks with the Iranian government in 2021, as you know, on that nuclear program. Same one that Obama put in place, which Trump ripped apart as soon as he got in office. Good. And Biden is still trying to put it through. Why? Why? And, of course, even now that has kind of fallen apart. You know why? Not because Biden said, this might not be a good idea for the American people or the world. No, no decision made by the White House. The decision made basically because They've seen Iran support Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the continuing protests in Iran. That's no surprise. In fact, in 2016, the Iranian president, Rouhani, called the ruling that gave money to the families of those Marines and others who were killed, his words, I'm quoting, a continuation of hostilities against Iran because we're making them pay for the death of American citizens. That's a continuation of hostilities. And, of course, we now know that Iran is clearly in bed with Hezbollah. Last Thursday, the head of Iran's Foreign Relations Strategic Council met with a Hezbollah leader in Beirut. And then also there was a political and economic delegation discussing regional developments. And the summation of the regional developments, I don't have it here in front of me. I don't know of any notes delivered or sent to any reporter. But I think I can guess, can you? What else can we do to destroy Israel? But it did happen earlier this year in March 2023. A judge did order Iran to pay nearly $1.7 billion to the families of those killed in the 83 bombing. And, of course, the ruling's appealed. The order still represents a legal setback for the Iranian government. See, this is where Obama went wrong when he was claiming that, remember the money we took from Iran that they had in various banks, we froze because they took over our Iranian embassy and holding Americans hostage. As you heard, former Corporal Johnny Harper say Rocky Sickman of the area was one of those. Many of you know that story. So they took our embassy and our people hostage. And now they say they're entitled to their money back. And Obama said, okay, we won't fight you. We'd probably lose in the world court, so we'll just give it to you. Talking about rolling over. Paws in the air, just whimpering. Please, please don't do anything else to me. All right, I want to go back to our situation we have going on now. Aid is being delivered, last report, or was delivered earlier today through the Rafah Gate, Egypt connecting to Israel, to Gaza. No additional hostages have been released, but aid is going in. Medical supplies, food, water. And how they're going to justify and make sure it gets to the people that are really in need and not to the terrorists, I couldn't even begin to guess. But already we continue to have, and we're just October 7th, and here we are October 23rd, and in that short period of time we have many, even in this country, saying there should be a ceasefire, that Israel should cease fire. I say no.
How do you respond to enough is enough?
Enough is enough should have been the case with Hamas 2 weeks ago. It would be good to hear the entire world speaking clearly and with one voice about the actions that Hamas took, about the slaughter of people, about the fact that that should be absolutely intolerable, unacceptable to anyone, anywhere, any country, any people.
Should be. Antony Blinken, Secretary of State. And that question raised by the CBS reporter, it's, again, the beginning of that seismic quake to, you know, and we've seen enough violence. Let's just all kind of sit back and play patty cake and let's just forgive and amend and everything. I can be forgiving. I can forgive you. I can distinctly remember forgiving you, which means I haven't. But in this case, the slaughter they carried out against Israeli women and children, the atrocities they carried out before they would kill them, and now we're just supposed to say, okay, things are even now. This is not a chess game. It's not a sporting game. It's war. And it started when Hamas invaded Israel and went through shooting innocent, unarmed civilians, raping, burning them alive, or whatever else they chose. So I'm glad to hear Antony Blinken saying, what do you mean enough is enough? Well, again, the CBS questioner wanted to push it.
UNICEF says 1,524 children have been killed in the Gaza Strip during these bombings. Why isn't the U.S. calling for at least a temporary ceasefire?
First, Margaret, when I hear the stories, when I see the pictures of young children who have lost their lives in this conflict of Hamas's making, whoever they are, wherever they are, whether they're Palestinians, whether they're Israelis, whether they're Jews or Muslims, it hits me, and I know it hits virtually everyone, right in the heart. And that's why it's so important to do everything possible to protect them, and why it's so important to do everything possible to get assistance to those who need it.
So why not ask for at least a temporary pause in the bombing, as was proposed at the UN this week?
We've seen, first of all, that in order to get assistance in, we've had that happen. And you saw the first 20 trucks go in yesterday. I expect more will follow today and the day after that. We want to make sure that we have sustained delivery of food, medicine, water, the things that people need. At the same time, I said something a minute ago that we have to remember. Israel has to do everything it can to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Yes. For all the criticism I will throw at Blinken from time to time, he's right on point here. And any ceasefire, even as the humanitarian aid is coming through the gates at Rafah, maybe as I speak they're doing it again, or will shortly. There's no shelling and bombing in that area, so where do you think Hamas is going and hiding out and moving their own weapons? And then, of course, intercepting the supplies and the aid meant for Palestinian civilians, much less the hostages they're holding. They are not going to play by rules. They're not going to play by humanitarian means. This is a deadly game to them, and they're going to extract blood wherever they can. If you missed it over the weekend, just yesterday, this is not news, but I want to re-imprint it on you. Defense Secretary Austin is putting additional U.S. troops on prepare to deploy orders for the Middle East. He made that mention yesterday. We still don't have a confirmed number, but it's estimated something like 2,000. Some will be coming from the U.S., which is contrary to what we have already in nearby theaters. So some will be activated from the U.S. and sent into that region somewhere. And I remind you this, Iranian proxy forces have already launched attacks against U.S. facilities in Iraq, Syria, and from Yemen. Keep them in your prayers. And remember our pledge, one nation under God.